Welcome to Wellness Renaissance and Gluten-Free and Other Special Diets podcast, supporting you on your unique journey to finding your best health. Hello, this is Judy B. Thank you for listening to this, our third practitioner interview in our project series with Megan Brenny. Megan is a UMD public health education and promotion student, and this series is part of one of her senior projects. Megan interviews Dr. Edward Simczak. He is a naturopathic physician based in Superior, Wisconsin at Tamarack Natural Medicine. If you're familiar with Superior, Wisconsin, he is right by the Red Mug Coffee Shop. And I just want to mention that if you are following the Wellness Renaissance podcast, you may have noticed that before this project, there is an episode where I interview Dr. Jocelyn Strand, who is also a naturopathic physician. She's in Duluth, Minnesota. And in the Twin Ports, we actually have three naturopathic doctors in our area. What a treat and really an honor it is to have the opportunity to share with you two of the three, so far anyway, their perspectives and passion that they have for their work. And really, how fortunate are we to be able to gain insight and depth about the practitioners that maybe you're already working with or maybe you're considering working with. Definitely an opportunity that we don't typically have when we're looking at a quote-unquote Western medicine or a physician in a typical clinic setting. I really appreciate their willing to share so much with us. Let's go to the interview now with Dr. Ed. This is the first of two parts with Dr. Ed Simczak. I'll be back to share contact information after the interview.
I'm here with Dr. Ed. He's going to tell us a little bit about who he is, what he does, and give us an in-depth detail of his profession.
All right. My name is Edward Simczak, and I'm a naturopathic doctor. What a naturopathic doctor is depends somewhat on where you live. So I'm trained as a primary care provider, meaning I can do all of the screening exams, act as a regular general practitioner, and take care of annuals, physicals, all those sorts of things, field your health concerns when you come in the door, just like your regular GP would. And that's what I would do most of the time, particularly in states where I have the scope to do so. Like in Minnesota, I can run labs and I can make diagnosis and I can also treat, but not with prescriptions. So let's say if you need oxygen, I can do that. I can prescribe, let's say, elderberry for the flu, which has better evidence than Tamiflu. Then I can do something like that, and that's all okay. That's within my scope. However, let's say that someone has hypertension and we need to bring on, you know, an ACE inhibitor or a beta blocker or anything like that, then that's when I have to refer. If I were in a state with a full scope, such as Washington or Oregon or several others, then as a general practitioner, I can also treat with pharmaceuticals, which makes it a lot easier to do the full continuum of care, which isn't a big part of my practice here, and it would be a bigger part of my practice, obviously, if I were in a different state. But being here, it allows me to spend more time on anything and anything, everything and anything between nothing and drugs.
Okay.
So what does that mean? Because that's really the big question,
yes,
of what I do, right?
Right.
Particularly here. So I still do everything that I can do as a primary care doctor,
okay,
meaning I still pay attention to screenings and guidelines and making sure that the standards of care are something that's on the radar, so we're not, you know, deviating really far from what is valuable from a public health perspective.
Okay.
And then when it comes to diagnosis, like I do that all, that's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, so we run the labs, you know, we interpret the labs, we make the diagnosis, you got to know what you're treating. If you don't know what you're treating, then you're just spending people's money, essentially,
right?
And using up their time. So that's really important to have a diagnosis.
Okay.
So getting the diagnosis is the first thing. And then we get to this whole, okay, treatment thing. First of all, is the treatment within my scope? If you have something that is acute that needs to be treated immediately and I don't have any tools in my bag that can manage that, then you need to be referred. And sometimes I have to refer right away. I've told people, I've said, you need to go and see your family practice doctor right now because I can't manage this with, you know, without someone else on board. Or we need to refer you to a specialist because you need to, if you don't see a rheumatologist per se, then,
mm-hmm,
you know, this isn't going to be managed as well as it possibly could. let's say we want to make sure that your joints aren't being damaged and we need to quit this, like get this under control. So that's the first part of it. But then the treatment scope goes much, much bigger than that. So when we look at things like physical medicine, okay, so what does physical medicine mean? Physical medicine can be anything with hands-on. So soft tissue work, kinesio taping, if you're familiar with that, or massage, or cranial sacral therapy, or even naturopathic manipulations, which are really similar to the manipulations that chiropractors use, but some states don't allow for that, just because the adjustments, even though I'm well trained in them, it's one of those politicized things where, oh, you know, we control the use of that. Okay. So it has to do with terminology. And
what does the difference of that and the chiropractic adjustments, what's like the big difference between those two?
Almost nothing.
Oh.
It's kind of like, the word Kleenex. So a Kleenex is a tissue, right? But everyone calls them Kleenex.
So
osteopathic manipulations are just adjustments, but they own the term on that. Right? They legalize that term, just like having a law around naturopathic doctors. So you can't call yourself a naturopathic doctor legally. So there's all these little word games, but also then it's, you know, part of the scope or part or not part of the scope, depending on what state you live in. And then, okay, then it also comes down to basic, you know, physical therapy. Like, okay, you know, I see that you're at your desk all the time and you're leaning forward and you have an upper cross syndrome where your shoulders are rolled forward. So let's work on stretching them out with a door stretch against the wall and then, you know, putting your hands against the wall behind you and pushing against them and strengthening your back and doing all the things that can work with your posture and such. So that's an example of, Yeah.
Conscious over how you sit then.
Right. So very basic things like that. That's what physical medicine basically refers to. And so then we move over to things like diet and lifestyle. I mean, diet and lifestyle is huge.
Right.
It's huge. It's not just this simple thing where it's like, okay, you just eat more vegetables. Okay. I mean, oftentimes when people go to a doctor's office, they'll say, well, okay, you know, how's your diet looking? I say, okay, make sure I eat some more vegetables. And that was really about it.
Mm-hmm.
And people get that. Like, everybody knows that. What vegetables, but also what's the obstacle? Like, is it that, like, I don't know how to cook a vegetable? Like, I don't like celery. Or I don't know what a legume is. What's a chickpea? How can I put them on my salad? Or do I need to cook them? Or, like, there's so many questions around food based on what each person's ability to cook, their time, their budget restraints. And so how do we make it happen where they don't feel like someone is losing their identity around their food? Because we identify with our food. We have foods that we love, foods that we hate, and families that we came from. And so it's like, okay, if we're getting stomach aches every night because we're eating, you know, like drinking milk and we happen to be lactose intolerant, we don't know all this stuff about why, but every meal growing up was mac and cheese. Okay, there's some discussion that needs to be had around this.
Right.
I mean, 70% of the world doesn't create enough lactase to digest milk. So it's that's an interesting example.
Considering how many cultures surround themselves around milk.
Whether
it's goat, almond, cow, there's just so many different types of it.
Right, and also, but are they fermented versus are they not fermented? Or are they pasteurized or are they not pasteurized? And there's this big discussion around that. But I guess the point, that was an example of where diet and lifestyle, so diet is a really big conversation because in the westernized world, we have a huge increase in rates of IBS and IBD and all sorts of problems as our diets get westernized as well, where we move away from fiber and we move towards a higher, you know, omega-6 fatty acid content, saturated fats, and also sugar. And salt, all of them, put them all together. So we know that this is a problem, and we know it relates to a whole slew of health problems that I won't even go into right now, but how to make it happen with someone is the challenge. You know, if someone has diabetes, they first of all need to know what on earth diabetes is.
Right.
And so when they talk about hemoglobin A1Cs and all this stuff, totally lose people. Number one, they probably don't care.
The medical jargon goes in one ear and out the other.
Exactly. So we have to find a common language that makes it easily to understand. So, like, for example, I say, let's look at your red blood cells. They live for about 3 months, okay? However much sugar is in your bloodstream over that 3 months, ends up powdering your red blood cell like a donut.
Huh.
Okay? So if that donut is really sugary, that means that your blood sugar has been high for a long time. Okay? And then if we measure another 3 months later, mm-hmm. and it's not as sugary, then that powdered donut is not as powdered. We can tell that it's gone down. And so, okay, we start to, now we have a framework to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about food. And we say, okay, do you know how to read a label? And I don't mean like measure out this many grams of
right.
carb, all that stuff. That's way too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like the healthy plate is actually a great example. I think that was a really nice development.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, we look at, can you tell if you look at carbohydrates on a label, do you know, like, why is there, let's say, 6 grams of sugar
mm-hmm.
and then 2 grams of fiber, but 10 grams of carbohydrate? Where'd the other two go?
Mm-hmm.
There's starch. Starch breaks down into sugar. And so there's these little tricks that people can learn to start to understand, but they have to, everyone's in a different place. Some people
right.
know that. Some people are halfway. Some people are at the bottom, and it takes a long time. So diet is a big part of what I do here, because there are a variety of diets that help with certain, you know, disorders too, and as well as just long-term health.
Mm-hmm.
And then lifestyle. Lifestyle refers to, once again, just an enormous amount of complex things that
right.
we experience as human beings.
Exactly.
This is really big for me in regards to not only public health, because
mm-hmm.
we know that socioeconomic, especially income disparity, is the strongest and most consistent indicator for health in a community. The bigger the income disparity, the bigger the health problems, every single time.
Yep.
And so I take that into account when I'm discussing with people what kind of stresses they're under, what does their lifestyle mean if they're at work, and let's say they're riveting planes all the time and they've got shoulder problems,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is part of their lifestyle, they can't get a new job, right? So what can we do about it then? But maybe they have something else they can do down the road. And
mm-hmm.
so we have to work within what this each person's lifestyle is, as far as like, what does it mean to them? How much do they, once again, identify and want to do what they're doing? Because some things we can control, some things we can't. What we can't, we have to, you know, process that in a different way than what we can.
Right.
And so if someone comes in there and they're really stressed out, because
mm-hmm.
let's say, you know, one person or another gets elected, okay?
That'll be tomorrow,
you know?
For us, right?
So, like, you know, does that change their lifestyle? How do they orient to the world,
mm-hmm.
you know? And are they concerned because they will or won't have the access to the same resources they have now? And lifestyle is a big thing. You know, it's not just exercise.
Right.
Right? Exercise is part of it, yes. And it's good to be moving, especially in this contrived modern world where we sit in the same spot all day.
Yes. I can relate to that as a student.
Right, yeah.
And
it's... And
don't move.
Exactly. So, you know, I tell people if they're in classes and they have problems with their back, like, stand up, walk around in the back. Like, if the professor has a problem or just doesn't, or just tell them, just say, hey, I need to stand up and walk in the back of the room for a little bit because I get sore.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just an example, right? But, and then exercise doesn't need to be something that is
dreaded,
right? I mean, some people struggle with it, but usually what it comes down to is time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like, what's something that they can do? You know,
the time that they have
right and
available.
One person might need a trainer because that's just who they are,
mm-hmm.
versus some person doesn't want a trainer at all, and some people they don't care and they don't want to do that, and that's totally fine.
Yep.
If they don't want to, then so be it. As long as, you know, they don't need to hear it though every visit,
right?
Like that, oh, by the way, you should be exercising or try and get exercise. Once again, people aren't dumb. They
heard
know
the
that
first time.
They
exactly.
heard you, right?
Yes.
But, you know, there's a time and a place to bring that up where it's like, okay, so, you know, this is where we're at with, you know, your, let's say your hypertension,
mm-hmm.
and we're at one medication right now and it's kind of flirting with two. So as we add up, then the chances for side effects or also the problems that we'll get back to a baseline are more complicated and difficult. So is this somewhere where you're comfortable having this discussion around activity? And if they are, great. And if they're like, no, not, you know, it's like, okay, I just wanted to check in with you.
So you really just work with each individual patient,
mm-hmm.
and to what works best with them, and not really giving them the same dry speech every single time they come in, and just working with what they can do to the best of their ability.
Right. It's no cookie cutter here at all. And yeah, some of the conversations might sound similar, because there are a lot of common challenges that people experience.
Right.
But, you know, you have to be really sensitive to each person's needs, because if they're not feeling heard and they're not able to be in a place where they can see around obstacles or how to work through them, or if you're not going to meet them there, then you're just pretty much giving them the recommendation and leaving it all to themselves, which, like I said, some people can do, but many people can't. They, you know,
kind of need their hand held a little bit through the process.
I don't even know if that's the right word. I would say they just need help with that first step to make things get started. So, you know, like I said, if I tell you to, like, exercise 30 minutes 5 days a week, okay, well, what if you don't have shoes and you like to run? Okay, well, all right. I've heard there's a couple of good shoe stores in town, but you know, I know that at Savers, sometimes they have newer shoes that are out there and they're pretty cheap. Okay, you need to get a bus line up there. And then what's a good day for you to do that? Oh, Saturday's probably the best day. Oh, okay, so maybe like take this Saturday, like just make this Saturday about going to get the, like get some shoes. So then, you know, you can get what you need, because then if you have those, then you're way more likely to do what you want to do because you have what you need to make it happen. And so it sounds like a really silly example, but, you know,
they're creating that foundation for them to just take that first step.
Exactly, because everyone's got something different. There's always something a little bit different for each person that makes it where, like, oh, I see where you're coming from. I get it. I hear you. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, and then you work with that. So that's this big diet and lifestyle thing where it spans a big, big part of medicine. And then, okay, so we start to look at then nutrient therapy. Nutrient therapy is basically, I'm going to give you an example. I got this back pain, this kind of spasm, maybe like a muscle tight or something, I don't know. And regular doc says, okay, you know, if ibuprofen doesn't deal with this, let's just take a muscle relaxant. Okay. Now, maybe not every doctor would do that, but I've had patients come in here and that's really been the story. They're just like, okay, they gave me a muscle relaxant. And I was like, okay. Well, are you drinking enough water? You know, and so, oh, okay. So some people, they just drink coffee most of the day, and then that's, maybe they don't drink any water.
Right.
It doesn't mean that people need to drink gallons of water, but they're clearly somewhat dehydrated.
Yeah.
And then, okay, how about magnesium? We know that magnesium can be a muscle relaxant, and that many people are deficient in magnesium. It's actually quite common, especially when we have a lack of whole foods in our diet. And so several people, that's really all they need. And they're like, oh, that got a lot better. Or they just needed a little bit of physical medicine where it's like, okay, well, let's get some hands-on. Let's stretch it, work the tissue. Like, oh, maybe your hamstrings are really tight and that's pulling down on your lower back, which makes it uncomfortable. And then you're sitting in a chair that's ergonomically terrible. or you're slouching. So we have this conversation around it, and lo and behold, it goes away. And they're like, oh, that was much better. And I didn't have to use a muscle relaxant. So nutrient therapy like magnesium, another example is vitamin D, which here it's so common. And it's a modifier and also a primary cause of people feeling pretty terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be another nutrient. Or let's say, for example, you get sick, you can use vitamin A. That would be an example of just, so nutrients are vitamins and minerals, things that come in as useful for different conditions or disorders. And, you know, they're pretty specific. These are things you can look up on PubMed really easily and say, okay, you know.
So you wouldn't recommend using WebMD?
No. I use PubMed. I don't use WebMD.
Yeah.
Nope. or Dr. Google. Now, this is a huge category because you can look at, you know, supplement stores. They have just shelves and shelves and shelves of this stuff.
Is there anything that you kind of recommend to use more so than something, or maybe even to stay away from a general rule of thumb for picking?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, the things that I offer here are a little bit more expensive, and that's because they're third-party tested.
Okay.
We know that 50% of what's on the shelves out in all of the stores doesn't have exactly the dose or the form or the kind of what you want in it, which is really frustrating. So when you're thinking of using fish oils for something, don't get it at Walmart, okay? And it sounds funny, but when you're paying money for that sort of thing, the FDA does not regulate the supplement industry.
Right.
So it's rife with conflict of interest, which is a problem, which is the same for several pharmaceutical groups and physicians. So where, let's say, a doctor prescribes a pharmaceutical, they get to upcode. And yes, ethically, this sounds like, oh my gosh, would a doctor really do that? But the fact of the matter is if they don't prescribe anything, mm-hmm. they get paid very little. And if they prescribe something, they get to upcode and get reimbursed more through their insurance. So let's say a provider like myself, okay, or anybody else that sells mm-hmm. supplements, there's a wholesale and then there's a retail. Now, you have to have some sort of retail overhead because when you have things on hand and they do right. expire, and then you have to pay for shipping, and there's issues, so you have to have mm-hmm. some overhead. But what some people will do, or especially the supplement stores, is they'll just say, we'll take this, and this, and this, and this, and this, because the more that they sell, the more profit margin, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you've got now something that's not third-party tested, not FDA-regulated, and you have a profit margin on the hand, mm-hmm. and the internet is literally exploding with okay. what you should take and do, it's a giant industry. So my rules of thumb are, use it like you would a drug. If you aren't clear as to why you need it, then don't use it. Mm-hmm. And there are side effects from several quote-unquote natural compounds. So it's not like you can just take them all. And because if you're expecting a benefit, mm-hmm. then that is a side effect,
right?
It's just a positive side mm-hmm. effect. People do have negative side effects. And I've had a couple patients particularly that have very detrimental side effects from trying things on their own. So you have to be really careful. You might go into a store and there's someone that's working there and they say, oh, well, this is good for this and this is good for that. Mm-hmm. If it's a cold or a flu, maybe it's fine, right? But if you're getting into any sort of complex health condition or something like that, then I would really, take it a little bit more seriously because the cost is not just your health, putting yourself at risk, but it's really also a financial cost. Mm-hmm. So if you're investing in something, you want it to be what you're paying for,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
And making sure you're getting the right dose mm-hmm. and the right form and such and such and such. So I'm really careful about that sort of thing because okay. there are people in the community that sell lots of supplements and it's outside their scope of practice and they make most of their money on it. And that really ethically bothers me. Okay, so then that's one part of nutrient therapy. Mm-hmm. And then we get to botanicals.
Okay.
Now, botanicals is a really interesting modality because a lot of our pharmaceutical medicines come from botanicals. If we look at Taxol from the Pacific yew tree, or aspirin from white willow, mm-hmm. or metformin from goat's rue, and on and on and on, there are so many medications that are derived from one component of a plant medicine.
Right.
So what that is you have a plant, and if you do an extract of a plant, which there are various ways to do so, mm-hmm. you take out a whole host of compounds. Now let's say that there's 1,000 compounds in this one extraction. And what a pharmaceutical company will do is say, okay, we think that this one compound is one that does something that we like. And it might only be 1% of that,
okay.
right?
Yep.
They'll take that out, they'll reformulate it, mm-hmm. chemically, and then make a pill, which has now a million of those one compounds, right? And so then you give that to someone, and that's a pretty huge dose of one single thing. So if it's acting on a receptor anywhere, or looks like it would affect a receptor somewhere, it's going to have a really giant impact. Whereas plant medicines, when you've got, let's say, 1,000 different compounds, you have quite a lot of interaction going on,
right.
and it's really robust, but also really complex. Now, I'm not going to pretend that I understand every single interaction that is going on because that's just ludicrous. We don't even understand like all the interactions that go on with one single drug compound.
Right.
We're still learning all the time. But when it comes to plants, because it's a broad spectrum approach, mm-hmm. we typically don't have as severe side effects as we do with pharmaceuticals. That doesn't mean that there's always a good option that's comparable, but oftentimes there is, and oftentimes they're really useful. One that I like to use as an example is an antibiotic. I've had patients who have had antibiotic-resistant bacteria,
yep.
and let's just use something as simple as garlic.
Okay.
Yep. Garlic, when prepared appropriately, mm-hmm. Will eradicate, I think, 97% of MRSA, which is pretty darn impressive, because
yep.
the closest antibiotic is not even at 25%. Right. So, we look at plants and we say, well, why? Why is that able to do that? Well, because that's what they do all day. Plants, their job is to kill bugs, right? Their job is to survive.
Exactly.
So they make all these different compounds that, let's say if a bug chews on it, then it gets broken down and released and changed, and then now it becomes, you know, antiparasitic or, right, exactly, or antifungal, or, yeah, exactly. So plants are really interesting. And if you look at the historical medicine across all these different cultures and all the different plants,
right,
there's so much valuable information there that is just, oh.
It's a constant learning.
It is. Well, we're relearning because it was swept under the rug,
mm-hmm,
and pushed out the door, you know, when this Framingham report, you know, said, oh, no herbalists. Nope. That's not real medicine, right? And then now we come back, we're like, oh gosh, well, we look at the clinical trials for elderberry and they're better than Tamiflu. And it's like, oh, okay. But no one talks about that because
right,
you can't patent these things. You can't patent a plant. You can only patent formulations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And something that you synthesize.
It'd be funny if they patented a plant a little.
Right, I know, right? Well, it probably actually, well, you're right, no, maybe it can be. Maybe a genetically modified. But the point is, though, is that people say, where's the research? Where's the research? And it's like, okay, well, there is research out there.
Yep.
It's not super robust, but that's because where's the funding going to come from?
Mm-hmm.
You can't get someone to fund it when there's no payout and profit margin at the end if you can't patent it. And so then a lot of the grants come from the NIH, or they come from these smaller grants where you have small clinical trials, and it's going to take a long time for this to grow to where we could say, well, can we do this on a larger scale? And
right,
also, do we have the resources to do so? I mean, do we have enough of, let's say, elderberry to make it through, you know, the cold and flu season for, you know, and I don't mean as an alternative to a flu shot or Tamiflu, but just as a resource. Like, that's you have to grow it. You have to then process it. It has to, so it's
extracted in all the.
Right, whereas in a lab, in one building, you can continually make, you know, one drug that will do this job, and you can continue to make it and make it and make it and make it. So there's resourcing issues that come along with botanical medicines, but that being said, some of them are very powerful and very useful. So plant medicine is something that I'm particularly fond of. And then, gosh, what else? Counseling. I don't think I need to say a whole lot about that, but counseling is a big part of what I do, just because I think that, you know, primary care,
mm-hmm,
that's where life comes in the door, right? And so
doesn't just stay outside.
Well,
it's always with the person,
right? And also they come in. That's when they first voice their concern.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a specialist office. It's like they've already said it a couple times, and the specialist is looking at one thing.
Right.
Whereas in family practice, you know, you might have the the husband and the wife or the kid, and then you start to see the dynamics, and
mm-hmm,
you understand more about their life because they've come in frequently. And so counseling is a big part of what I do. And I took extra training in biofeedback because I find that to be useful as well for specifically particular conditions, but also just in general practice. So those are the big modalities, right? The big treatment
yep,
areas that I use here. But I also consider myself a clinical scientist. So I was a part of research, you know, at Best Year in integrative oncology and Parkinson's.
Okay.
So, when I get people coming through the door,
mm-hmm,
because here what I see a lot of is chronic conditions because people have been through their different doctors and they're not getting very good results, or they're having problems, or they're just saying, is there any way that I can maybe do better? And so they come here, and then what I do is I hit PubMed and I start reading research. I get updated on reviews. I look at, you know, specific trials, and I say, okay, well, you know, this is what's out there. And oftentimes there are things that are either missed or not looked at because it takes a while for something to hit mainstream.
Right.
Or
almost a resource for your clients and patients.
Exactly. Right.
Just really transferring what's being done, and so, because a lot of people don't really know to go look at PubMed or things like that.
Right, and you know, and that's where it's at. You have to, you know, because I don't like it when people Google and they're like, oh, I read on, you know, this this website that
Buzzfeed.
This, and it's like you know, even then, because even though, sure, this clinical trial might have said this, but that was in a petri dish. That has nothing to do with a person yet. It's too early.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, I like to do that for my patients, and that's been a really great resource. I wish that I wish that research were more available, and I think it will be over time, you know, where...
progressively get better and easier to understand, hopefully.
Right.
Or just more available and more talked about for others.
Yeah, you got it. So that's those are the big things that I do. I don't think I'm missing anything. I might. If I do, I'll come back to it later.
Yes.
Yeah.
We might touch on it later, but...
Sure.
Back to the practicing in Minnesota. I know that your address here is Superior. Does that make any difference? You still... go under Minnesota, or are they almost the same?
So I kind of walk the line.
Okay.
You know, so technically in Wisconsin, it's not really a great place for me to be because there's no law for naturopathic doctors.
Okay.
So there is someone down in, you know, I think Minong or whatever, who calls herself a naturopath, and she has no training at all.
Okay.
And so it's not really a great state to be in.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a good handful of well-qualified naturopathic doctors in Wisconsin right now trying to put together a bill.
Okay.
And find a champion to put it through this next year. So the reason that I ended up here was because this space is amazing.
Right.
And it's a third the cost. I mean, and everyone knows the Red Mug, right? So it's like, it was so easy. Whereas in Duluth, there was no elevator or there was no parking. And the cost was a lot more with big leases. And I was kind of like, you know, I don't know, I'm just starting up.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do is I essentially walk the line. I say, all right, well, I can send you over to St. Luke's to get labs and, you know, and everything else taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's where my license is and it's honored there.
Okay.
And then, you know, you can just bring it back to me and we'll go from there. So, but I do so much referring right now,
mm-hmm.
because with specialists and writing letters back and forth to calling providers, that I do that with people in, like, with different medical doctors in Superior and Duluth, and I haven't had any problem.
It's kind of nice being in a little bit of both worlds.
It is nice, and actually a lot of the people here in Superior are really glad that I'm here because they're like, you know, we just don't have access to anything like that without going into Duluth.
Right.
So it's been a good thing. But in the future, you know, should the scope improve in Minnesota or I could get, you know, insurance reimbursement or something like that, then I would probably have to move over. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's a good thing it's close, so Superior won't feel too left out.
No, it's not far. I mean,
yeah.
I'm literally like 3-4 blocks away. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That concludes the first of the two-part interview that Megan did with Dr. Ed. If you would like to connect with him, his practice is called Tamarack Natural Medicine. It's located in Superior, Wisconsin, in the building that is connected to the Red Mug Coffee Shop. You can connect with him via the web at tamaracknaturalmedicine.com. And not too far in the past, the Duluth News Tribune did a really nice article on him and his practice. And if you'd like to check that out, if you Google Simzak Duluth News Tribune, The Natural Way, even with none of that in quotes, you will be able to pull it up right away, or at least I was able to. And if you would like the spelling of his last name, it's Simzak, SZYMCZAK. Again, that's SZYMCZAK. Definitely check out the next episode for the final portion of this interview. You can connect with Wellness Renaissance and myself at wellnessren.com or via Facebook at facebook.com/wellnessren. You can check out Wellness Renaissance other podcast episodes, information on the health, wellness, and food group that meets here in Duluth most months, as well as other offerings, and don't hesitate to email if you have any questions. Thank you so much for listening. Be well.